to do my disclosure?
I guess I should say that I don't have anything to disclose, even though it's up. I too did not put everybody who's involved in this project in here because I knew some key individuals were going to be here. And so before I get started, I'd just like to introduce them to you, because if you have any questions regarding this project, these people have a wealth of information. And the first person I'd like to introduce is Rear Admiral Penny Royal, who is the Deputy Assistant Secretary for Health. And then Carter Blakey and Leni Simon have provided us with fabulous leadership on this project. And then my colleague Megan Hiltner is here. She's been very instrumental in the evaluation portion of the project I'm about to tell you about. So as I mentioned, if you have any questions, hopefully we'll all be able to participate in that discussion. This was a two-year project, and in keeping with the 15-minute time commitment, I've tried to pick out some nuggets that I can provide to you. So if I don't talk about things that you have questions about, please remember those questions, and at the end of all of our presentations, feel free to ask them or come up to us afterwards. So what this project was all about is really it was an example of using very minimal funding to motivate change at the local level with regard to positive health behaviors. And the background for the project, the background for the project really was that ODPHP, the Office of Disease Prevention and Health Promotion, and the regional health administrators have as their agenda to really provide the leadership to advance the nation's prevention agenda. And in keeping with that, ODPHP had received some funds to really try and produce three outcomes. One was to motivate positive health changes in local communities. And in order to make the best use of those financial resources to improve health at the local level, they determined that small funding awards, and by small I mean $2,000 to $5,000 awards, would be used to stimulate and support community-based health promotion and disease prevention activities that were consistent with the Healthier U.S. pillars. And as you all know, hopefully those pillars are improved nutrition, increased physical activity, increased screening, and making healthy choices. And the target for this project really was to try and get small, very small, community-based organizations and tribal communities to address health disparities. And so in order to do that, JSI was engaged so that we could assist with developing a very simple request for proposal that, as you'll see in a minute, was very widely distributed. But what we did was, in trying to determine how to best get the funding out to the communities, we really determined that the request for proposal, in order to get very small community-based organizations to respond, had to be very clear and very simple. And so we had a number of conference calls and webcasts with our advisory group, which included ODPHP, as well as the regional health administrators. And we developed what we felt was a very clear and concise and simple request for proposal. And I don't know if anybody in the room, when I've given this talk before, typically there are individuals in the room that actually were awardees, but I'm not sure if any of you are actually awardees of the Take Action grant. I guess I assumed there wouldn't be, but I better check before I go on. Okay. They were very small community-based organizations, as I mentioned before. So what we did was we developed the request for proposal, And we had some project funding criteria that we used to really be able to rank all the proposals that came in. And basically the funding criteria the key criteria were that the community-based organization or tribal entity had to propose a new or enhanced project, that it needed to be a not-for-profit group, and that we would have two funding preferences, and that those would be that these small CBOs would have a budget under $750,000 and that they would, with the funds, address some sort of health disparity. Another key to getting this widely distributed at the local level was to have wide distribution of the request for proposal. And so we put together many listservs, and we had listservs from the regional health administrators, including their offices like the Office of Women's Health and the Office of Minority Health. We also had listservs at JSI that we used, and we distributed the RFP across the nation. And as you'll see in a minute, we got a response that was unbelievable. And every time I give this talk, I know Carter is saying, "I told you, Risa," because at the beginning of this, I kept thinking, you know, you're offering $2,000 to $5,000 to these communities. Who is going to go to the trouble of filling out a request for proposal for these funds? Well, as you'll see in a minute, that's who. We actually got over 2,000 proposals to use these funds. And when I get to the end of the presentation, the evaluation, you'll see that the outcomes were actually very successful, that communities were able to use these funds and leverage them to improve health in their communities. So, as I mentioned, I'm afraid to go back. Do you think it'll go back? Yes. The RFP, when we sent it out, because we wanted it to be very easy for communities to respond, also included a technical assistance toll-free telephone line, as well as an email address so that potential applicants could call us or email us with questions about filling out the proposal. We did get over 500 emails. We responded to over 500 calls, and so there were a lot of questions to be answered, but we were thereby able to help a lot of these small community agencies fill out the request for proposal, which in and of itself was very clear and very simple. I did not bring an example with me, but if anybody's interested further in the project, we'd be happy to share it with you. And I think Megan might even have an example. So as I mentioned, we got over 2,000 proposals, of which about 1,700 met all the review criteria. JSI had staff, a number of staff. We started to recruit people in our families to just make sure all the review criteria were met. And as I said, in the request for proposal, we had told everybody what those review criteria would be, so they were very clear on what they had to put in their proposal. This just indicates by region across the bottom, if you're familiar with what region you're in, how many proposals that we reviewed by region. The way we did this was we worked in very close partnership with the regional health administrators. We had brought them along since the beginning. They assisted in development of the RFP. And then when it came time to actually review the proposals, JSI did the review of the proposals based on criteria that everybody was aware of. And then we recommended potential awardees to the regional health administrators. However, with their in-depth knowledge of the region and their wanting to be fair in allocating the funds perhaps across all their states and to a variety of the healthier U.S. pillars, they had the final say in determining who would be funded within their region. And so we had a very close working relationship with them, and as you'll see when I get to the evaluation, they found that the methodology we set up to do that was extremely helpful. So this slide actually is not such a happy slide, because you can see that of all the projects that were proposed, we were only able to award, with the funding that ODPHP had, 112 projects. But there were 112 projects awarded nationwide, and you can see those little red lines are the ones that were awarded as opposed to the ones that applied. All the projects, as I mentioned before, had to address one of the Healthier U.S. pillars. Many addressed more than one, and I'm going to give you some examples of a couple of projects in a minute. But most of the projects actually addressed, as you can see from this chart, nutrition and or physical activity. So those were the ones that had the most proposals for that particular pillar. And now, the most fun part of this actually was being very aware of the projects and understanding how excited people were to use these funds to implement the projects locally. So one of the projects was the Catawba Cultural Preservation Project, and that was in Region 4 in South Carolina. It had two components to it. Keep in mind that these awards were $2,000 to $5,000. And what they did with their funding, really, was the elders of the Catawba group mentored the Catawba youth in traditional gardening techniques that was handed down from generation to generation. And so what they did was the youth learned about traditional gardening techniques from these elders in the community, and then the youth actually also delivered crops to other tribal families in the community and provided them with education on healthier eating choices. And then the other component of the project was the elders taught some of the traditional games to the youth, which encouraged physical activity among the youth. So that was one of the projects, to describe that to you. Another one was the Men's Health Pit Stops in Region 5 in a rural area, and that particular project addressed screening as well as nutrition. And for that project, farm workers who were bringing their grain to the grain elevator were approached while delivering their grain, and they were offered testing, which obviously addressed the cardiovascular disease disparity in rural areas. They were also offered some healthy snacks and some water and some information on upcoming health events. And so that project was very successful too, and that one addressed both screening and nutrition. My personal favorite was the walking bus in Region 7, and these folks used their funding to buy T-shirts and safety supplies, and they had older folks in the community form in front and behind the students a bus, and they walked the younger kids to school every day, and so it provided some safety for the students, but more importantly, physical activity for the older folks in the community. So that was also a great project. And just one more from North Dakota, Region 8, which was the First Presbyterian Church, and they had a garden project to grow fruits and vegetables to be used in meals that were provided at homeless shelters, which the congregation served. And one in particular was a YWCA shelter, and this project really addressed food justice by offering some healthy, nutritious food to the homeless population. And so that was another project. So those were just four examples of, there were 112 differing ideas of what to do with this $2,000 to $5,000 that really made a big difference in the health of these local communities, which was wonderful. And the way we're able to know that is that we did an evaluation of the project, which we just recently wrapped up, and we used an evaluation framework that actually included qualitative as well as quantitative measures. And what we addressed in the evaluation was not just the process, but also the project outcomes. And we used two tools. We did a qualitative evaluation of the regional health administrators, and that was mostly regarding the process, but they were also, some of them were very familiar with the project in their communities, and so we also probed some of the success of the individual projects in their communities. We also did a web-based evaluation of the awardees, who were very happy to participate in the evaluation. We used SurveyMonkey, so it was very easy for them to participate. And actually, if they didn't have electronic capability, we offered them to be able to do it through the mail as well. But I believe everyone had electronic capability, so that was not a problem. And what we found through the evaluation, some of the results hot off the press, are that the electronic means of disseminating the RFP was very effective in reaching a very broad geographic audience. I know a lot of people say that sometimes you can't reach people electronically. Well, we actually found that that was a very good way of doing it, that people were engaged and they were able to participate in the project. We also found that the ease and the simplicity of the RFP design made the application process very accessible to the CBOs that we and the tribal agencies that we really wanted to apply. So they had very minimal grant writing capacity, but they were able to fill in the proposal. And another key, I think, to the success was the regional health administrator's involvement at the outset of the project. And we were able to bring them along through the approval process, and also some of the regional health administrators actually used some of their staff to provide technical assistance to a lot of these projects throughout the project. So that was helpful as well. We also found we had a 95% response rate for the evaluation that the awardees had to fill out, so that really was very successful. And mostly, I think we found that, other than the other, you know, that it was clear, et cetera, I think withholding 10% of the funds until they completed the project really prompted them to fill out the evaluation. And so good tip if you're ever providing grants to hold back, withhold a bit of the funds. But it is very helpful to have the evaluation, and I think the projects understood that, and so there was no problem with them in doing that. They found that that was not an issue. So as far as the outcome evaluation, we did find that two-thirds of the awardees reported that their projects were extremely successful, that they used a number of innovative mechanisms in their projects, and, you know, things ranging from different types of health education techniques to technology and media modalities. Some of them created a DVD, and we found that low-income populations benefited the most. 94% of the populations that were being addressed were low-income. We also found that creating and fostering partnerships to supplement the projects with monetary or in-kind support was extremely important for sustainability, that those were able to create those partnerships and leverage the small amount of funds they got with other partners in the community were the most sustainable. And when we asked them what would have made it better, obviously additional funding and more staff were identified. So in conclusion, I think the important nugget here is that with very little funds, I think we were able to successfully target those funds to the local communities, and awardees were able to conduct some very successful, innovative, and relevant projects that improved the health in their local communities. We also found that the centralized coordination of the microfinancing was very helpful in trying to get things done quickly over the time period. And I think with there were maybe two or three, there was some turnover in some of the local agencies, some of the awardees, but with the exception of those two or three, I think we found that positive community outcomes can really be had from infusing very little funds into the local community and letting them be very innovative in what they do with those funds. I think that's where everybody is most familiar with the health aspects of the community and what will work in their community to create healthier communities. So do I have 1 minute still? Because I thought I would just read you a little vignette, a quick one, because they're so great. I have so many, but I'll just read one. As a result of this project, we have 8 organizations signed on as part of a community-wide diabetes campaign, a buyer's club delivering fresh apples weekly to local community groups that serve children and teens in after-school programs. A diabetes prevention poster contest is underway, a collaborative health project involving 8 groups and all ages in fitness and nutrition for 8 months this summer, anticipated 200 people involved, and 8 people who are about to complete training as diabetes educators. These are community residents. So that's just an excerpt from one of the evals that one of the projects sent in, and I think it really says everything about this project and the success of it. Thank you very much for your time.
Our next and last presenter is Camila de Oliveira, the Program Director of the HOPE Project from the Community Action Committee of Cape Cod.